50 years ago, an extraordinary account of an escape from the Soviet gulag caused a sensation. The book called The Long Walk became a classic of adventure and endurance. Yet, no one has ever known for sure whether it's a work of fantasy or, as its author insisted, the literal truth. Now it has inspired a major Hollywood feature film. Tim Huell investigates The Long Walk.
We swung our bags off the bunks by the rawhide straps. "Everybody well," I whispered. From all around me came the hissed answer. "Yes." Anybody changed his mind? There was no reply. Said Makovsky, "Let's go."
The 1956 bestseller, The Long Walk, is a story of endurance and determination that celebrates the triumph of the human spirit against overwhelming odds. In it, Sławomir Rawicz tells how, as a former Polish cavalry officer, he escaped from a Soviet labor camp with a small band of fellow prisoners.
We gasped and choked and wheezed, but we ran and kept running into the great forest among the looming white-clothed trees. We ran south with the camp at our backs, like hunted animals. We were all straining our ears for the sounds of the chase.
They were fugitives in the featureless snowy forests of Siberia. But remarkably, Rawicz says he knew which way to go, because he'd made himself useful to the camp commandant's wife. While her husband was away, he'd mended her wireless and seized the opportunity to study the top secret map on her living room wall. With no guide but the sun, with no supplies but a few loaves of bread and bags of pearl barley, they began to trek south, sleeping in snowdrifts, avoiding all human contact, hunting with a wooden club. They trudged on and on and on. Winter turned to spring, spring to summer, as they picked their way across mountain ranges, swamps, rivers and forests, eluding guards as they crossed the Soviet border into Mongolia and the barren emptiness of the Gobi Desert.
In the shadow of death, we grew closer together than ever before. No man would admit to despair. No man spoke of fear. The only thought spoken out again and again was that there must be water soon.
Once they went 12 days without water. Still they tramped on, through autumn, winter, and another spring, from Mongolia into Tibet and across the Himalayas to India. There, after 4,000 miles on foot, Sławomir Rawicz and three fellow fugitives gave themselves up to British intelligence. They'd buried four of their companions along the way. The Long Walk, published in 1956, has never been out of print. Its hundreds of thousands of readers include adventurers like Benedict Allen.
The will, the tenacity that anyone would have, the imagination to be able to believe that you could ever walk day after day, week after week, month after month through this barren, awful place is beyond most people's capability.
Even before his escape, Sławomir Rawicz had apparently endured suffering that would have crushed many men. According to the book, he was arrested by the NKVD secret police in 1939 after his hometown in eastern Poland was occupied by the Soviet Union. Then he was convicted on trumped-up spying charges and sent to Siberia. Now this extraordinary tale has inspired a great contemporary film director, Peter Weir, the man who made Dead Poets Society and The Truman Show.
I have to get back.
Go over the Himalayas?
How?
We walk.
But Peter Weir hasn't called his film The Long Walk. It's The Way Back. And oddly for anyone who knows the book, the central character, Sławomir Rawicz, never appears. Artistic license? No. There's a deeper, more disturbing reason.
Just keep walking.
You kept out of it
by name a character called Slavomir Ravitch. In other words, the person who wrote the book is not explicitly in the film. Explain why that is.
Having absorbed this tale and finding I couldn't get it off my mind, I rang the producers and said I'd do it as my next film. But I just had one small throwaway question. I really didn't expect the answer I got, but I said, it is true, as it says on the cover, right? And there was a silence. And then the producer said, well, there's a controversy.
That controversy was highlighted in a programme I made for BBC Radio 4 4 years ago, which Peter Weir then listened to.
And so then a painful period then began, some 6 months, where I contacted Hugh Levinson, the producer of this programme, having heard the BBC radio programme that actually raised the question of its veracity in a very sharp way, and began my own investigation. Did he do the walk?
Who could confirm Slavomir Ravitch's account? He died in Nottinghamshire in 2004, having come to Britain after the war. The only person we could find who remembered him from before that was a fellow Pole called Kazimierz Zuzmak, who befriended him in a British military training camp in Palestine in 1942.
Well, first met this place called Barbara, and that's where I met him.
So when you met him in Palestine, he didn't mention about his escape from the Soviet camp or about his long walk?
No, none whatsoever. This came out here in England, but it never mentioned anything really about it. The long walk, he never talked about it till the book came out.
Like tens of thousands of other Poles, Zuzmak had been interned in a Soviet labour camp after Stalin's invasion of eastern Poland in 1939. They were released after Russia changed sides and joined the Allies in 1941. Zuzmak had no reason to think that Slavomir Ravitch's story was any different. But someone else thought it might be. That someone was a tabloid reporter. Ronald Downing worked for the Daily Mail. He approached Slavomir Ravitch 10 years after the war because he'd heard rumours that Ravitch had been in the Himalayas. And why was the Daily Mail interested in the Himalayas? The BBC explained.
For many years now, those who have climbed the Himalayas have tried to find the answer to a mysterious question. Does there exist among these mountains a creature the world has come to know as the Abominable Snowman?
1954. Sir Edmund Hillary and Sherpa Tenzing had just conquered Everest, and Britain was in the grip of Yeti fever.
The latest first-hand observations on this question come from two members of the Daily Mail expedition to the Himalayas. They are Mr. Tom Stobart and Mr. Ralph Izzard.
And to the Daily Mail's delight, the Polish ex-serviceman Slavomir Ravitch could confirm their reporter's account. Indeed, he claimed he'd seen not one, but two of the elusive creatures.
The Daily Mail, 7th of January, 1954. The Snowman, the strangest story yet. High in the Himalayas, two massive creatures, nearly 8 foot tall, barred their road to freedom.
Freedom. In the mid-1950s, freedom was an even more potent buzzword than Yeti. It was the height of the Cold War. Russia was the enemy, and any story of escape from its prison camps was bound to sell. Slavomir Ravitch told the Daily Mail reporter Ronald Downing that he'd escaped. Then, as the two men sat together night after night for 2 years, Ravitch gradually recalled much more that he'd apparently never told before. How he went on to cross the Gobi Desert, the wastes of Western China, the mountains of Tibet, before struggling on his last legs to safety and freedom in British India. The book that came out of those sessions wowed the reviewers. But oddly, Ravitch's fellow Poles, equally committed to fighting Soviet tyranny, were unconvinced by his account. Gulag survivor Alex Topolsky remembers how the celebrated author met an unexpectedly hostile audience here at London's Polish Hearth Club.
When the book became popular, he came to this building, there's a big room there, and was answering the questions. And they were asking very, very pointed questions, to which Ravitch was avoiding or just not answering. People who said, Mr. Ravitch, and what were you doing because we are in the Camp Barbara in Palestine. How did you get there? Oh, this was when I was sent from India. But you were never in India. Oh, yes, I was, but there is nothing in the documents of it. Obviously, he didn't know how to answer.
No one could corroborate the story of the long walk. Ravitch said that he'd escaped with 6 companions. 2 died of exhaustion and starvation, as did a young Polish woman who joined them on the way. Another plummeted to his death in an icy crevasse. That left 3, besides Ravitch, who supposedly made it to the Bay of Bengal, another Pole, a Lithuanian, and the most enigmatic character in Ravitch's book, an older American known only, even after they'd gone through hell for a year together, as Mr. Smith. But despite all the publicity surrounding the book, and it was translated into 25 languages, none of those 3, or anyone else who knows them, has ever come forward. So how do we know that the long walk wasn't simply a hoax? Travel writer Patrick Sims, who knows the mountains and deserts between Russia and India, can't believe that Ravitch and his companions were ever there.
They cross Mongolia, which he describes as a land of slow-moving rivers where men in conical hats pole along in boats. Well, I just came about 6 months ago from the exact region of Mongolia he claims to have passed through. It's sharp mountains with ice-cold rivers and no boats at all. His description of Tibet is not only wrong in many fascinating details, it's almost backwards.
Further doubt about Ravitch came from a man I went to meet in Moscow, archivist Alexander Kokurin, who'd spent his life researching the Gulag.
This is our stop, Frunzinskaya. I can tell Alexander's very, very excited about this story. He's already on the escalator up asking me lots and lots of details about the story. He says his first impression is that the story sounds completely fantastical. One reason why it's fantastical, he says straight away, is that Ravitch was held in the town of Kharkov in the Ukraine for most of 1940, according to his account, which is a year when there was an enormous mass execution of Polish officers, which Ravitch, of course, never refers to.
Even more seriously, Alexander went on to tell me, there was no record of Camp 303 that Ravitch said he escaped from. Then, back in London, another document to open, further evidence that Ravitch might have been a fantasist. He claimed in the long walk that he was an officer and a gentleman from a patriotic Polish Catholic family. But this package we obtained from the state archive in his hometown of Pinsk, now in Belarus, includes a letter sent to the Soviet authorities that reveals that his father was actually a lowly Orthodox priest.
Having been a priest, I was not harmful to the Russian people and was as useful as possible in my work as a priest as I was as a teacher in my schools. And as a Russian man, have always loved my Russian homeland, its people and the language.
But the most damning evidence against Ravitch came from an independent American researcher called Linda Willis. Speaking to me from Middlebury College in Vermont, she told me why she devoted a decade of her life to trying to solve the mystery of the long walk.
Initially, it was just plain curiosity because I did a lot of traveling overseas for many, many years in a lot of these areas, China, Tibet, India. And there were many times over the 10-year period I was researching this that I just dropped it. I thought, well, I've hit a dead end. There's no more I can do. And then a surprise phone call, an email, a letter usually would arrive, and off I'd go again.
Through emails, letters, phone calls, and painstaking work in libraries and archives, Linda Willis followed every lead she could find. She's now chronicled her quest in a new book, Looking for Mr. Smith. It lists many dead ends. But there's also this key discovery.
One of the sources, of course, was the Memorial Society, a human rights organization based in Moscow. And I obtained amnesty documents, travel documents from the Memorial Society, which basically stated that Slavomir Ravitch was released from prison and was allowed to leave the Soviet Union to go to Persia.
Управление НКВД по Красноярскому краю.
It's an amnesty paper handed to Ravitch by the Soviet authorities in 1942. That's the year the thousands of Polish servicemen in the camps were released to join the Allied war effort. And it proves that Rawicz's story was roughly the same as all the others, that he never escaped from a camp, as he describes in The Long Walk.
From what I uncovered, and there were three main sources, it is really doubtful that he did make that walk. Why he would have, fabricated the story, or why he might have claimed someone else's story as his own is anybody's guess.
Claimed somebody else's story as his own? So maybe, even if Sławomir Rawicz didn't make that epic journey, someone else did. But who could that have been? And how would the story have been stolen? Well, our Radio 4 documentary on The Long Walk produced an extraordinary result that sent me hurrying on a train to the far end of Cornwall. An anonymous letter informed me simply that there was a man living in Camborne called Witold Glinski, who might be of great interest to me. I found his phone number, and his wife picked me up from the station.
That's where Badko came in at the hostel.
Oh, I see.
He came down and worked on the land, you know, spreading lime and doing all sorts of work for the ag and fish.
Then, in a close of neat white bungalows, I was met by Glinski himself, an elderly, old-fashionedly courteous Polish emigre.
Come in.
Thank you very much. Glinski is a very modest, unassuming man, a Jehovah's Witness, not given, you would think, to fantasy or exaggeration. But he had an extraordinary story to tell.
A doctor that was looking after me, and he said, "You had a very rough time, haven't you?" He said, "You're fortunate to be alive." I said, "I don't remember being dead."
The tale he told me, with some wry humour, over many hours in his immaculate front room, was weirdly familiar. Glinski had escaped in 1940 from a Soviet prison camp after repairing a wireless.
Commandant found out his radio wasn't working. He was asking anyone could repair the radios and so on. Nobody volunteered, you know, and somebody opened their mouth. Oh, he said, he knows what to do with them. So he said, "Well, you better come in." And thus I went in there. That's the first time I met his wife.
Just as Sławomir Rawicz described in The Long Walk, Glinski used that lucky break to study a secret map and then crawl under the wire.
The weather was so atrocious, you couldn't keep your eyes open properly because it's plastered, literally plastered, the snow and wind.
So what did you do?
When everybody was snoring away, asleep in there or pretended to sleep, I took my things on my back, it was all ready, and quietly went out from the barrack, had a look left, right, and so on. I can't see the towers, I can't see the dogs. Suddenly you see behind you, what do you call it? I said, "Shh, shh, shh, it's me." I said, "Who are you, me?" He said, "I want to come with you, all right." They must have planned, some of them, to escape, but I beat them to it.
And that was only the beginning of the story. Witold Glinski says he went on to walk 4,000 miles from northern Siberia to Calcutta. He just hadn't told anyone before. To be listening to a man who claimed to have accomplished the feat that I'd come to think of as mere fiction was extraordinary. All the more surreal as we looked out over the rockeries and driveways of the Cornish coast.
We got used to silence, more or less. It is lonely walk. Doesn't matter even if people are around. You feel isolated. We were prey to animal and man.
What do you fill your mind with?
Well, I was thinking how I'm going to get a plane, train as a pilot, get the biggest bomb that Americans or English could make, and then I get high, fly to Moscow, look for the Kremlin and blast it out of the ground, you know, and whoever is in it. This was the driving force inside me, revenge to what the Germans and Russians did.
All the main elements of Witold Glinski's story were the same as those in Sławomir Rawicz's book. His companions were the same, even down to the mysterious American Mr. Smith. So what had happened? Had Glinski read the book and taken over the story? Or could it, just possibly, have been the other way round? When The Long Walk was published, Glinski had never met Ravitch. But he had had, back in the late 1940s, a mysterious encounter in London that, with hindsight, took on more significance. He'd been approached in the street by a bedraggled Polish officer and a rather dapper Englishman.
They just approached me and they said, "Are you Witold Glinski?" I said, "Yes, what do you want?" "Well," he said, "we would like to have a little talk with you because we are thinking to write Polish history from where you come from and how you got to England." So I got immediately suspicious. So I said, "Well, I haven't got anything to tell you."
Glinski later identified that Englishman as the Daily Mail reporter Ronald Downing, the co-author of The Long Walk. He thinks that perhaps Downing had somehow got hold of the transcript of a debriefing interview that Glinski gave at the Polish embassy, in which, he says, he described that walk in detail. The only time, apparently, that he'd ever described it until I arrived at his Cornish bungalow 60 years later. He'd never even told his own children. All this, of course, stretches the imagination almost to breaking point. Why would Downing, the reporter, then have waited a further 7 or 8 years before putting the story into Ravitch's mouth and then publishing it? Why would Glinski have kept silent for so long, failing even to protest publicly when The Long Walk was published, becoming a worldwide sensation and earning Ravitch a small fortune? We've tried and failed to find any corroboration of Glinski's story, either of the escape or of the trek. So we're back to square one. Perhaps they never happened. And that's what the Gulag survivor Alex Topolsky thinks.
Because of the surroundings, of climate, local population were giving reward in food and everything, if they bring the prisoner. So to escape was to avoid people. The Russians would say they will go back, especially in summer, because they'll be eaten alive by the mosquitoes.
And yet, eventually, we came across one piece of evidence that points the other way.
I think I will always look back on my happiest days when I was camping.
That's the voice of the late Rupert Main. He served as an intelligence officer in Calcutta in 1942, just when Glinski says he and his surviving companions finally presented themselves to the British authorities. Years later, Main's son, James, read The Long Walk and asked his father about it.
I was amazed to find that he was actually involved in it.
And what did he say?
He said, "Well, refer to the second last page. I was the chap who had to interview them." That he had been asked to go and interview, I think, three people who were in a pretty desperate state and had come through the Himalayas. And his job really was to check to see whether they represented any sort of security risk.
What else did he tell you about them?
Well, he said that they spent hours every day squirreling away bits of anything and everything that they could get hold of, particularly food and bits of clothing and so on. But he was pretty convinced that, given the state they were in, that they must have been through some unbelievable hardships.
Rupert Main couldn't remember the names of the men, or even how many of them there were. But now I've heard another story, also passed on from father to son.
My name is Henry Hudson, and I am the youngest son of Bronislaw Bogusiewicz, who changed his name to Hudson in 1960. And I live in Christchurch, New Zealand.
Henry Hudson's father, Bron, was living in India in 1942. A polyglot, he was asked to help out with a debriefing.
Somewhere in that period, my father was actually asked to translate on behalf of four men who claimed to have escaped from a prison in Siberia and crossed through the Himalayas to India. And I think that that's the link through to the book, The Long Walk, by Slavomir Rawitz.
Could Bron Hudson have interpreted when the British intelligence officer Rupert Main interrogated the four survivors in Calcutta? The trouble is that his widow told the American researcher Linda Willis that Hudson had spent those years on the other side of India, in Bombay. And there's another odd detail. Hudson himself had apparently also escaped from a Soviet camp and walked to India. By a different route, it's true, through Afghanistan. And yet the similarity is a bit strange. And there's another coincidence in his story.
Well, my father was an engineer, and I understood that at the prison of war camp, they were having communication problems, and my father was called upon to undertake repair work. It turned out that the commandant's wife had some sort of link to my father's family, and she gave a warning to my father that very adverse things were going to happen or were happening to many of the prisoners.
Another story of a broken radio belonging to a commandant's wife, which indirectly helped a Polish prisoner to escape. Could they all be true? The further I followed these tales, the more I began to wonder whether, in the nightmare of war, they were passed on forced marches, in barracks, troop ships, or cattle trucks, so that people retold them and absorbed them, and came to believe, in some cases, that the stories had happened to them, their family, or their friends. The broken wireless, the mysterious American, the teenage girl rescued in Siberia, the courage to walk across a soulless desert and an impenetrable mountain range. 60 years on, the line between fact and memory has become impossible to define. Maybe then the long walk wasn't just a fantasist's imaginings or a cynical fabrication to make money. It's a story with a power of its own. That was explorer Benedict Allen's view after we told him of our doubts about Slavomir Ravitch. The film director, Peter Weir, heard that interview on our original programme.
To think that someone did this journey makes a very different ending. OK, maybe the author isn't the great hero that he'd liked us to feel he was, but someone was out there.
I was very touched by some of the words from Benedict Allen. And he talked at one point in the documentary about there's a universality to the story. It's not just this single Polish fellow who wanted to get back home, but somehow that it's about the struggle that all of us have to survive every day. And, you know, this is on an epic scale, as he says.
Someone got through it all, and perhaps that's the most important thing.
The Long Walk was presented by Tim Hewell and produced by Hugh Levinson.